But it was Infinity. Of that, Philo now had little doubt. The two men were friends, and the young man had been fired up by the apparent death of his compatriot. So these were the people the Sec Patrol had fought yesterday. And they hadn't chilled or taken Affinity. In fact, he seemed on friendly terms with them, and they were headed back toward Memphis. This was most strange. Philo had no idea what it might mean, but he was sure that they should refrain from attack. He knew that Mark wouldn't have bothered trying to hear what was being said. The Sec Chief would be too busy psyching himself for combat. It was probable that only Philo was aware of what had been said between the approaching strangers. He knew that he had to inform Mark right away and stop an attack that could be disastrous, unnecessarily so for the Sec Party. The young man broke cover to seek out his chief. Mark stepped from his own cover, grabbing the young man by the arm and pulling him into the shadow.
What in the name of Minos do you think you're doing, you idiot?
Rapidly, Philo gabbled everything he had heard, knowing the time was of the essence. When he had finished, Mark nodded briefly.
You did right. I'll halt the attack and we'll reveal ourselves.
Philo smiled in relief, but it died on his lips. The advancing party had fallen quiet, as though aware of the ambush and wait for them. Ryan held up his hand to halt the party, but he needn't have bothered. Although seemingly relaxed, the companions had been acutely aware of their surroundings. They had tuned in to the silence around them, and although apparently paying no heed to the environment, had easily caught wind of the change. Ahead of them, the foliage had moved, and the rustling was underscored by something that could only be muffled human speech. Ryan looked questioningly at Jack. The albino youth held up three, then four fingers with a slight shrug, indicating he couldn't be more exact about the numbers. Ryan nodded and gestured to JB and Jack to fan out and come around the source of the noise in a pincer movement. He further indicated that the remaining five move forward in a staggered line through the trees, with weapons in hand. For stealth, and because of the proximity, he indicated also that blades would be of more use than blasters. Jack tossed a couple of leaf-bladed knives to Christy and Mildred before he and JB headed off in separate directions, disappearing silently into the undergrowth. The others began to move forward, now watching every step, keeping sound to a minimum. Affinity wondered at their ability, realizing that they were a match for any team of Nightcrawlers, and hoping that the opposition wasn't his own people's sec, if only for their sakes. Mark gestured to Philo to move back into position, wincing at the amount of noise the young man made as he went into cover. Mark knew that all his men were willing, but the fact was that they simply weren't of a comparable quality to their opposition. For all of the talk of Memphis mounting a raid on Atlantis to topple the ruling regime, he knew in his heart that talk was all it would remain, at least for a few years to come. He slipped farther into shadows, then moved toward the source of the noise before it had ceased. In the time before he had run from the Oldville, he had pretended to be a crawler. He had played the games and acted as though he wanted to become one. But the truth was, he was filled with loathing for them, and the way in which they treated the people for whom they were supposed to be the Sec Force. But he knew that if he could learn a few of their tricks, then it would aid his escape. And it had. It also made him the best fighter in the breakawayville of Memphis, and natural choice for Sec Chief. In many ways, this was something that sat uneasily with him, as his natural inclination was not to lead. He loathed the concept of leaders and followers, as to his mind it led to the kind of situation that prevailed in Atlantis, so he tended to let his men have their heads. The only problem with that being that in situations such as this, there were those who had no idea what to do. Philo was trying to keep his progress as noiseless as possible, but found it hard to tell, as nothing seemed to be audible over the thumping of his own heart. He blundered forward, tongue licking over his lips, hoping he would find the fighters with Affinity before they found him. The other two in the Sec Party, Paris and Jason, were still in position. They were frozen with fear, which would spell their certain death under most combat conditions, but in this instance might just save them. Mark was faced with a difficult choice. There was no way he could reach both of them and tell them of Philo's discovery, partly because they had spread out in their initial formation, and partly because he had no idea where they had moved to, if at all. He had no way of pinpointing their location. He didn't want them to blunder into the opposition, as he was sure they would be bested, perhaps killed. His only certain way of ensuring their safety was to reach the opposition first and make himself known to Affinity. But even this had its problems, as he had to hope that they hadn't moved far from his estimate of their position. How much easier it would have been if he had been alone. or if he'd had a better team of fighters. As it was, he could almost feel the weight of responsibility bearing down on his shoulders. It clouded his judgment, he was sure. So much so that it took all his attention, and he was surprised when he felt the point of a blade nick the skin at the base of his neck when he stopped to take his bearings. He hadn't heard the owner of the blade drop from the tree above him, hadn't registered the sound, until the cold metal was already pricking his skin, until he could feel the breath on his cheek.
I don't want to cut you, but if you get jumpy, you'll have no spinal cord left. Drop your knife. Believe it or not, we're on your side.
While JB was overpowering Mark, Jack was taking care of Philo. The young man had blundered through the undergrowth, making enough noise to be tracked by anyone. He was moving so fast and with such recklessness that the albino had to remove himself from the young man's path. Jack sidestepped the oncoming Philo, and Philo was on his back, staring up at the sky before he knew what had happened. And before he even had time to take in this much, he found Jack descending on him, expertly pinning his arms and legs so that he was unable to move.
Affinity says you shit fighters. Maybe teach you otherwise if you stay calm now.
Philo felt bile rise in his throat and choked it back as he nodded. He was so scared that he almost vomited. Jack wondered how the boy had managed to stay alive thus far. Jack stood up and indicated for the boy to rise and follow. Paris and Jason had proved just as easy for Ryan and Christy to overpower. Both had been rooted to the spot, wondering what to do next when they were approached from the rear. The Sekhmen realized that these opponents weren't nightcrawlers, although they weren't aware of Affinity's association with the strangers, and they were merely grateful to be allowed to live. Mildred and Doc felt a little slighted in the circumstances, if truth be told, with neither having the opportunity to engage with the Memphis Sek. They stuck close to Affinity, and the three of them forged ahead, looking for any others who may, to the best of their knowledge, be lurking in the undergrowth. With the dense cover, it was momentarily difficult for the companions to ascertain how successful their mission had been, but when JB and Jack moved back toward the centralized position of the group, it soon became apparent that the four-man Sek force had been neutralized. Mark was rueful and not inclined to be graceful at such an easy capture, although it soon became clear that he and Philo had been aware that the companions were no threat.
Maybe that explains why I fight like shit.
No, you would have had us anyway. Look at yesterday's mission. One lost, three wounded out of eight. Not the kind of ratio that speaks of success. And we lose people every time they attack. We aren't that populous. The longer things continue, the more we face extinction. I think your help would be like a prayer to the old ones that has been answered.
You know, I'm getting a little tired about the way everyone sees us as some kind of fucking cavalry. Long story. Yeah, maybe I'll tell you about it sometime.
What?
Never mind. First thing we need to do is get back to your ville. Maybe then we can settle and discuss things. We might be useful to you, you might be useful to us. We'll see.
With the Memphis people relieved to see Affinity still alive, and the companions glad that they didn't have to fight so soon after the previous night's battle, it was with a feeling of elation that the expanded party made its way to the ville. As they walked, Affinity explained to his people where the companions had come from, and where they were originally headed. When he had finished, Mark stepped forward.
That is something that I find strange. The fact that you came through the exclusion zone.
Exclusion zone? I haven't heard that phrase since before the nuke cost.
Indeed. That area in which no animal life can exist has been called as such for many generations. The old legends say that our ancestors deliberately poisoned the earth in a belt surrounding the ville and the adjacent area when they knew that Skydark was coming. It was intended to keep out any intruders during the Great Darkness, to protect our people from outside interference. But I wonder, it is, after all, just as effective at keeping us in.
Surely there have been others before us who have come through there. People who, like us, have stumbled upon it by accident.
Mark eyed Christy shrewdly.
There have been some traders who have made efforts to find new places to trade. But it takes an interesting kind of an accident to, just as you say, stumble upon it.
Maybe we just have a lot of accidents.
No matter. This is something you can discuss with Lemur when you meet him. For even if you choose not to stay and help us, you'll still need guides to take you to the coast. The crawlers are everywhere. They frighten us, and we stay because we have nowhere else to go. They frighten the birds and animals, and they leave, never to return. Perhaps that will give you measure of why guidance will be necessary.
It sure as hell explains a lot.
Right. Of course, if you choose to assist us, then perhaps there will be no need for a guide.
You're not getting off that easy. I just wish you didn't all talk like Doc. Right, Doc?
The old man looked up, his face blank, as though distracted from a train of thought.
Hmm? Why, yes, dear boy. Of course.
Few words were exchanged after that, and their journey to the Ville of Memphis proceeded with little event. On both sides, there was much to ponder, and the companions, all in their own ways, felt that silence would be the best path until they had a better grasp of what was going on in this isolated area. Memphis itself was made up of the ruins of a suburb. Mildred still maintained her feeling that it wasn't the Trenton of which Affinity had spoken, but as they emerged to the ruins of what had once been a freeway access, now overgrown apart from a desultory run of blacktop into nowhere, its progress broken by a shift in the earth that had swallowed whatever came before, she could see why he had made this assumption. Over the top of the desolated ribbon, hanging at an obtuse angle and obscured for the most part by creeping vines and the twisting branches of muddy trees that had climbed the rusting metal structure, there was the partial remains of a lane indicator sign. The only word that was visible through the grime, heat-blasted metal, and rampant foliage was Trenton. As they left the overgrown forested area and entered the remains of the old suburb, the foliage began to recede. Yet among the blasted and flattened two-story houses and rows of burned-out raised shopfronts at mini-malls that had once served the residents, there were many signs that a post-New-Cost muty nature had attempted to take back and remold the land. Where entire streets had fallen victim to fire, earth movement, and heavy bombing, there was little sign that there had ever been anything remotely approaching civilization. The undergrowth and the strong, adapting, and surviving trees had swept across the scorched earth, annexing the territory like an invading army and driving out all signs of a previous life. But the farther they traveled into the suburb, the more civilization began to win over nature, no matter how strong and mutated. After a quarter hour of walking, the sounds of life grew louder, and the buildings became firmer, stronger, and better preserved. They kept walking for another 4 or 5 blocks, with little sign of life except the increasing noise.
We keep our ville as secure as possible. Of course, it could be argued that we have done naught but to exchange one jail for another, but at least it is a jail of our own design.
This point was amply demonstrated as they turned another block to be confronted with a wall. One constructed of building rubble, old wags, pieces of sidewalk and roadway, anything that could have been used and taken from the surrounding ruins. It was poorly made, and constructed by people who hadn't the time or expertise to fashion their materials. From the top of the wall, which followed the line of streets, and so disappeared around corners and out of sight, there were poles obtruding from the junkyard construction. Between the poles were lengths of wire strung with metal strips and crudely fashioned bells. Anyone who attempted to climb the wall, which was only a few yards high at its peaks, would undoubtedly attract a lot of attention to themselves.
It's crude, but effective. In Atlantis, we are taught to build slowly and with care. But here, this rough method of construction serves its purpose, which is all we require when having to build quickly, with little manpower and only the materials that come to hand.
The wall was crude to look at, yet the detritus of the ruined suburb had been employed to fashion a construct that had a greater solidity than it first appeared. Each part of the junkyard defense had been slotted and placed so that the constituent elements interlocked into a fortress. Its hurried and seemingly slapdash construction was further belied by the sight that greeted them as they walked around another old suburban block. Set in the middle of the wall, with the junk flowing over the top in a smoothly interlocking design, was a gateway. This showed signs of having more time spent on it. Slabs of masonry taken from the surrounding area had been fashioned into an arch that was rubbed smooth and engraved with pictograms similar to those the companions had seen on the painted sekpost. Within this arch had been set double doors of beaten metal, engraved and etched with another set of symbols. The stark design and simple beauty of the arch and the doors contrasted sharply with the visual clamor of the junkyard wall. And somehow they had to have a spy mechanism within them, unless somehow word had got back to the ville in another way, as the doors opened smoothly on their approach, and they were greeted by a group of men and women, all clad in the same white robes trimmed with red, as were those they had already met.
John, I don't care much for their fashion sense.
Must mean something, but what?
Maybe we'll find out before too long.
The companions in the accompanying sec party were swept into the Ville on a tide of goodwill. The doors, quickly closed behind them, a reminder of the dangers that still lurked outside,